Tonight was the Quake by the Lake episode of AEW Dynamite. They were in Minneapolis, I believe. That's where they were tonight for the big interim world championship main event. Jon Moxley defending his title against Chris Jericho, the first two men to be AEW world champion. Chris Jericho was the first. Jon Moxley is the one who beat him at Revolution 2 years ago to become the champion. They went one-on-one tonight in the main event, building to the return of the actual current AEW world champion, who we have not seen since, the beginning of June. When he broke his foot, he shattered his foot. Back in the ring for the first time tonight, CM Punk. Back just in time for their next pay-per-view, which just so happens to be in Chicago. Coming out to make the save after the match for Jon Moxley, after he had already retained his title, beating Chris Jericho, Lionheart Chris Jericho, in the main event. They went face-to-face, nose-to-nose. We now know, without it being made official yet, we now know what our main event is going to be for All Out. I'm looking forward to the promos building up to that match more than anything else. But CM Punk's return cannot come at a better time for Tony Khan. He has been plagued by injuries now throughout the entire summer. And now not only is he getting back his world champion, but after tonight it looks like he's getting back three huge names. The other ones being Bryan Danielson, who we now know is going to be back in action on Dynamite next week. He's going to be in a 2 out of 3 falls match against Daniel Garcia. But they very heavily teased, without saying anything, they teased the very real possibility that on TV next week we are going to get the in-ring return for the first time in almost a year of Kenny Omega. They did not say that Kenny Omega is going to be on the show next week, but they have ruled out Hangman Adam Page being the partner for Matt and Nick Jackson in the Trios tournament. And who else does that leave? Adam Cole already turned on them, and he's not medically cleared. Hangman is going to stick with the Dark Order. There's only one man left. So Tony Khan now is in a position where he is getting back three of his biggest names all at the same time. It could not come at a better time. He has been waiting. He has been dying to get these names back. And remember what he said. Before the Trios titles were formally announced, he said the titles were already made. He has had the championships made for a while now, but he was waiting until Kenny Omega was ready to come back. He said that months ago. Well, now the tournament is about to begin, and we have a mystery man next week. So who do you think it's going to be? Three big comebacks coming to AEW. Now, I mentioned the Trios tournament. We actually got brackets tonight, so now we know who is in this tournament. I'll throw them up on screen for you. It begins next week on Dynamite. They're going to have the first match with the finals taking place at All Out September 4th in Chicago. And there you see the brackets on the left-hand side. We have Death Triangle taking on Will Ospreay and Aussie Open. We actually have the United Empire part of this tournament. I was not expecting to see Ospreay as part of this, which I think is very cool. We have Andrade El Idolo, Dragon Lee, and Rush taking on the Young Bucks and whoever their mystery man is going to be. Then on the other side of the bracket, we have the House of Black, who were my pick to win the entire thing. If it were up to me, I'd be putting the belts on them. House of Black stepping into the ring with the Dark Order. And we have the Trustbusters, who have only been a thing on Dark. They've not appeared on Dynamite before tonight. Trustbusters is Arya Daivari, who is now calling himself Ari. The storyline is that he has come into a great deal of money. Arya Daivari, Slim J, and Parker Boudreaux, the former Harlan from NXT. They are the Trustbusters. They're going to be in action against Best Friends. Interestingly, no Adam Cole and Red Dragon, so they are legitimately not medically cleared to be in this tournament. No Blackpool Combat Club representation. No Jericho Appreciation Society represented in this. I guess you don't have to throw all of the key teams in there, but there are some notable omissions in this tournament. As I look at this bracket, House of Black against the Bucks, and who I presume to be Omega. I mean, that would be the biggest possible match that they could do in the finals. And you could give it to House of Black, but I'm also thinking, you know, Miro had a promo on this show where he made it very clear that he is coming for Malakai Black, he is coming for the House of Black. It could be a case where Miro is going to cost them, and maybe the House of Black is not going to move on. Maybe they're bounced after the first round. Can you imagine the House of Black losing to the Dark Order in the opening round of this thing? But I could see them having Miro kind of interject himself in here somewhere. Maybe we end up getting Malakai and Miro at the pay-per-view. I look at the right side of that bracket. You take out the House of Black, the right side of this bracket looks absolutely dreadful. So I hope the House of Black could at least make it to the finals. That is my hope. We have three really good matches on the show tonight. We had a hot opener. We had a very good Tornado tag team match. And we had what I thought was Chris Jericho's best match in months in the main event against Jon Moxley for the interim world title. And that makes this a thumbs up show. The one main criticism I have, we can talk about blood and all that, but the main criticism, you know, last week I gave them praise because I felt like the pacing of the show was better. It didn't feel as if they were trying to, yeah, I've used the expression before, they weren't trying to put, you know, 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, which is sometimes how these shows feel. They just try to stuff so much stuff, so many quick backstage segments in there that you don't have time to process everything. Last week, I thought they kind of slowed it down a little bit. They improved on that front. And then this week, they just went right back to the way it was. I thought the pacing, it was right back to the way things were before. One right after the other, boom, boom, boom. One segment, we have the Trust Busters, who we have never seen on Dynamite before. Then we have the Gun Club. There's Danhausen talking about his bearded partner, which is Eric Redbeard. Who the fuck would even know what he was talking about? We got a graphic later, at least telling us who his partner on Rampage is going to be. Just a lot of stuff thrown in there. But I did think overall that it was a very good show. We opened this episode of Dynamite tonight, the Quake by the Lake. I know we were having some fun a couple of weeks ago with all these names for these different themed episodes of Dynamite, and what could we call future episodes. Tonight was the Quake by the Lake. We opened with the coffin match. Darby Allin going one-on-one with Brody King. We were 2 minutes into this show. Now, you know that on this show, Jon Moxley is wrestling. And you know Jon Moxley is in the main event, and he is defending his championship. So you knew Jon Moxley was going to bleed, right? That was a foregone conclusion. We were 2 minutes into this show with Darby Allin and Brody King, and we already had a gusher in this ring. It was sickening, the amount of blood that Brody King spilled here in this match. Basically, this was a bloodbath, is what this was. Darby jumped Brody in the ring during his entrance. So when the lights came back on, Brody King was in the ring. Here comes Darby, going right after the guy, not wasting any. And we had a hot crowd tonight, too. I don't remember offhand exactly what building they were in, but I thought the crowd was hot all night. You know, some weeks, depending on what city they're in, they're not quite as energetic, but I actually thought the crowd tonight was pretty damn good. So he attacked Brody King right away, and he hit him in the back with his skateboard. The skateboard had thumbtacks all over the bottom of it. So he nailed him in the back with the skateboard, took the bottom part of the skateboard with all the thumbtacks, and he starts raking it over Brody King's forehead, back and forth like a cheese grater, right? He's raking this guy's forehead. Brody King comes up, and he is gushing blood. I mean, he is leaking like a faucet all over the place. He had to use both of his hands to try to wipe it out of his eyes. Darby hit him with an avalanche code red. Brody came back, and he just started flinging this guy around like he was garbage, throwing him into the barricade over here, throwing him into the barricade over there. He threw him over by the timekeeper's table. Darby did a flip. He threw him into the crowd over the barricade, went out after him. Gorilla pressed him back to ringside, so back over Darby got like he's a crash test dummy. He was throwing this guy around. Now, they cut to a break. And during the break, Brody grabbed a table from under the ring and he slid it into the ring. Then he grabbed two more tables. He set one of them up on the floor and he laid Darby across the table. And he climbed up onto the apron. He climbed up the ropes. He went for a splash. Darby moved and Brody crashed through the table. He did a belly flop through the table. Darby was setting up in the ring for one of his crazy dives when all of a sudden the lights went out. And when the lights came back on, there was Malakai Black. There was Buddy Matthews, the other members of the House of Black, standing shoulder to shoulder with Brody King out on the floor. This did not deter Darby. He was like, well, whatever. And he went to go hit the ropes anyway. As he hit the ropes on the other side, though, Julia Hart was under the ring. She reached up and she grabbed Darby's foot. And when Darby turned around, that gave Malachi Black the opportunity to get in the ring, and he clipped Darby's knee from behind. He chop-blocked him, took his knee out. Matthews hit his Matthews Law finish. Brody followed that up with a cannonball through a table in the corner. They had propped Darby up against the table in the corner. Cannonball breaks the table in half. So now we have chance of We Want Sting, because we have the entire House of Black, and Darby's all by himself. So everyone's chanting for Sting. We want Sting. Like it's 1997. We want Sting. We want Sting. Malachi tells Matthews to go outside. And he wants him to retrieve the coffin and bring it into the ring. He goes outside. He lifts the lid of the coffin. And Sting is laying inside the casket. He's got the baseball bat with him. But it's a tiny casket. You know, when WWE would do casket matches, they have these big, elaborate caskets. I mean, think about it. Most of the casket matches Undertaker had early in his career was all against big guys. He had casket matches with Kamala. He had casket matches with Yokozuna, Kane, right? It was always these big guys, like 7 foot guys or 400 pound guys, 500 pound guys. So they would put together these like giant, elaborate looking caskets. In AEW, it's just a shitty little pine box with thumbtacks underneath the lid. So Sting is having a hell of a time trying to stand up out of this thing. I mean, that plus the fact that he's 63 years old, and you have had him laying for at least a few minutes here in this cramped little casket. So it took him a little bit to get out of it, and Buddy Matthews was very nice to Sting. He could have kicked the guy right in the face. He stood there and he waited. He waited for Sting to collect himself and to get upright and vertical, and then let Sting hit him with the baseball bat, which is what Sting did. He hit him with the bat. He went into the ring, he attacked Brody King with the bat, and then finally he turned his attention to Malachi Black, who is sitting down in the corner. I almost said Malachi Bat. He tossed the bat to Malachi. He said, here, you can use it. And Malachi took the bat, he stood up, and he just smirked, and he dropped the bat, and he walked out. Sting, by the way, his makeup, one of his eyes, he had it made up with. Yeah, we've seen this before where somebody will get misted. This is what happened with Julia Hart and with Pac. After they get misted by Malachi, there's this black, I don't know if you call it a rash or what you would call it, painted around the person's eye, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger every week. So Sting had makeup around one of his eyes to look like that. So Malachi walks out, and Sting goes and walks after him, and they end up having a face-to-face, nose-to-nose confrontation on the stage. Now, I don't think they ever came to blows. They took the camera off them, and they didn't show them again. But the last shot that we saw, they were nose-to-nose on stage. But there was still a match going on. So we cut back to the match at ringside. Darby hit his crazy dive to Brody outside, but Brody came back, and he just body-slammed Darby on the steps, right on the edge of the steps. Brody lifted the lid of the coffin, and he hoisted Darby up on his shoulder, and he climbed the ring steps with him. And he was going to, it looked like he was going to power slam Darby off the apron and into the casket. Actually, you know what? It's funny. The casket that we have in the artwork here on screen is actually much nicer than the casket that they had on TV. So I was just looking. This is a very nice looking casket here. Far more expensive than the one they used on TV tonight. And no, Sting does not, I don't believe Sting has herpes, but who knows? When you get a, maybe he has, pink eye. He's got stink eye. That's why they call him Mr. Stink. But this finish, this was an awesome finish. So Brody has him over his shoulder. He's on the apron. And Darby manages to escape. And he grabs a chain. And he starts hitting him in the head with the chain a few times. And then with Darby in the ring and with Brody King on the apron, he wraps the chain around his throat and he starts to choke him out. And he's pulling back on it. He's pulling back and pulling back until finally his body goes limp and it's just dangling. Brody King, he's basically kind of just dangling there. Very similar to how Darby Allin lost in the Royal Rampage match all those weeks ago against Brody when he got choked out and he just dropped him. That's when Brody won the Battle Royal and he got the title match with Jon Moxley. So it was a little callback to that, but this finish was great. So when his body goes limp, Darby finally lets go. And Brody King collapses to the floor, but he goes right into the casket, right? He falls into the casket, and the momentum of falling into the casket was enough to where the lid shut on its own. Nobody had to lower the lid. The referee didn't have to touch it. He fell into the casket. The lid shut behind him. It closed on him, and Darby Allin wins the casket match. You should just watch the finish. I'm sure someone's uploaded it on Twitter somewhere. It's perfect. You could try that finish 10 times. I don't know that you can hit it as perfectly as they did more than once or twice. So I thought the finish looked great. Jim Ross called it a hole-in-one, which is basically what it was. I thought this was a wild, bloody, very bloody, all Brody King. Darby wasn't. I don't believe Darby was bleeding, but Brody was bleeding like a fucking stuck pig. But you knew that it would be. I have not seen very many good casket matches over the years. Let's just be honest. There really isn't such a thing as a great casket match. If you think back to all of the casket matches we got in the, you know, in WWE over the years. The best casket match that I've ever seen is the Grave Consequences match with Mil Muertes and Rey Fénix from Lucha Underground Season 1. This was probably the best casket match after that that I've ever seen. I know it's a low bar, it's low praise, because there haven't been very many good casket matches. But that one is still number one. This one, I would say, is the second best one that I've ever seen. Darby needed this win, which is why I also like this. He's lost more than he's won in recent months. And Darby is still one of their bigger stars, and I think that this was the perfect way to give him a win. That doesn't take away from Brody King, because you can have Darby win without pinning Brody King. You know, he didn't have to get pinned. He didn't have to tap out. He fell into the casket. It looked great. They closed the lid. Darby gets a much-needed win. But Brody King looked like a fucking beast out there. He looked like a monster. And I give Tony Khan a lot of praise. And I give Brody King praise, right? Because he's going out there and he's doing what he does best. When he's out there, and he's had a number of singles matches now, they've done a very good job of making him out to look like a real monster. Like, this guy is somebody you don't want to be in the ring with. He's got that aura about him. So I think they've actually used him very well. I would argue they've used Brody King better than they've used Malakai Black. Although we found out this week why we haven't seen much of Malakai Black. He's been dealing with a very serious back injury. Thought he might have to retire. But it looks like he has, you know, figured out a way to remedy the injury. And hopefully we'll be seeing more of him now on TV. But they have. They've been using him better than they have been using Malakai Black. So I thought this was a win-win all around and a hot opener to the show. We had a couple of promos here to build up the main event. One from Jon Moxley and one from Chris Jericho talking about their championship match. Moxley said that this interim title was forged in Cincinnati, which I don't know if I would be gloating about that. The Mets have handed their asses to them almost every single time those two teams have met. Today was no different. But he says it was forged in Cincinnati, and just like the famed Heart Dungeon, this title is about pain and how much you can endure. For over two decades, we've watched the last survivor, the Lionheart, and watched his fighting spirit on full display. He says tonight he's going to push it to its breaking point. We got a Chris Jericho promo immediately after that, clean shaven, with his Lionheart look. He says that he's going to take back what's rightfully his. 2 years after he first won it, Moxley wants to face Lionheart. Be careful what you wish for. Jericho says that he's going to stretch the shit out of Jon Moxley. Penta and Rey Fénix up next. The Lucha Bros taking on Andrade El Idolo and Rush. Tornado tag team rules, which means this is, you knew going in this was going to be spot fest, wild, you know, crazy match. And that's exactly what it was. Tony Khan has been trying to put this match together now for probably a couple of months. And Andrade, I know, has been dealing with inflammation in his ankles. Nothing major, but he's been out with an injury. So now Tony Khan finally got to book it. This is the match he's been dying to put together. And it was worth the wait. Penta hit a destroyer on Andrade on the apron. And he went for the fear factor on Roosh. Roosh fought out of it, and he tied Penta's mask to the middle rope. And we've seen them do this spot before in certain matches. But he tied him by the mask to the rope. So now Penta is stuck. If Penta wants to free himself, he's going to have to unmask himself. So now Rey Fénix, his brother, is all alone in the ring. He's trying to fight these two guys off all by himself. And he eats a missile drop kick. Roosh has the match won. And Penta now has to make a decision. Do I leave my brother to die and lose the match? Or do I unmask myself so that I can save my brother? And he makes the decision that he's going to rip his mask off, and he breaks up the fall, and he's trying to cover up his face. Half his face is showing, but he's trying his best to cover up. Alex Abrahantes is on the outside. He tosses a new mask to Penta. Andrade, though, intercepts. And Andrade picks up the mask, and he throws it into the crowd. And like a baseball game, the fans start chanting, "Throw it back! Throw it back!" They want this guy to throw it. Or maybe it was a woman. Whoever caught it, they want them to throw it back. Well, the fans like, "Fuck you, I'm not throwing it back." So I don't believe the fan ever threw the mask back, or else they would have showed it. But Roosh ends up hitting the bull's horns, shotgun dropkick to Fénix in the corner. And Andrade followed that with the hammerlock DDT for the win. So this was fun. And it was a win that they needed, because now Andrade and Roosh are going to team up with Dragon Lee. They're going to go into the Trios tournament next week against the Bucks and the Mystery Man. And they needed this win going into that match. So the Young Bucks are in the back, and they have Brandon Cutler telling Cutler to follow them into the Dark Order locker room, because in the Dark Order locker room is Hangman Page. And they want to talk to Hangman. And Matt Jackson says, look, this was their mea culpa, basically, for all the shit that they've done, all the shit that they've said. Matt Jackson, he was out there trying to win an Emmy for his performance here, which was, he's not going to win any awards. But he's basically saying, look, I wish I could take back everything that, you know, I did to you, everything that we did to you. I wish we could take it back. He talked about their friendship and said that he didn't know if it was the big contracts or the money and the fame that got to their heads, but he's very sorry. And he said that they were in the same building here tonight where Adam Page won the AEW World Championship, which was last year at Full Gear. He said he couldn't even bring himself to congratulate Page. Matt said that a lot of people say that he and Nick are despicable people, and maybe they're right. But Page brings out the good in them, and he asked Hangman if he would agree to be their partner in the Trios tournament. He's like, come on, we got to get the Hung Bucks together. What do you say? And Hangman says, look, guys, I can't do it. I'm sorry, I can't do it. Said the Dark Order, they've been there for him the last 2 years, and they've been his friend like the Bucks used to be. And he said the tournament is Dark Order's chance to win the titles, and he wants to be in their corner. He says he's not even going to wrestle in the tournament. He's going to be in their corner for moral support. And he can't go against them. And, you know, the Bucks played it cool, like it didn't bother them. They understood, and they left the room, and Cutler said, hey, guys, you know, I think he was talking about me being your partner instead. And they told him to shut up, and that was the end of the segment. So as I said at the beginning, there's only one man who makes sense to be their tag team partner. There's only one person who makes sense, which means that we are very likely getting the in-ring return of Kenny Omega next week on TV. And actually, so let me bring the bracket up here. It's against Andrade and... yeah, it's against Andrade, Dragon Lee, and Roosh. So think about this. We could have a match on TV next week. It could be the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega against Andrade, Dragon Lee, and Roosh. That's a hell of a fucking match. That is a hell of a match, if that's what it ends up being. And it really can't be anything else. So another huge name for Tony Khan to get back at a time when he really needs some of his big guns back. Heading into the fall. You know, fall TV season, very important. He's getting these people back at exactly the time that he needs them. We had Luchasaurus Dark. He's still wearing the black and coming out to his heel music, taking on Anthony Henry. We had Jungle Boy sitting in on commentary for this match. Luchasaurus, he flattened Henry with a German suplex. Henry hit an enziguri. Luchasaurus came back with a headbutt and the fossilizer for the win. After the match, Christian Cage pops up on the big screen. He's in the back. Starts talking. Jungle Boy recognizes where he is. He knows where that is. He sprints to the back to go after Christian. And he gets back there and he's restrained by security. Luchasaurus comes back there. He ends up beating up a bunch of security guards. He chokeslams one of them onto an equipment crate. Jungle Boy goes off to run after Christian. That was the entire segment. So you can see the card for All Out is now the key matches are coming into focus, right? We know it's going to be Punk and Moxley in a unification match. We know that we're getting the finals of the Trios tournament. If House of Black doesn't go all the way, maybe we get Malakai and Miro. One-on-one. I'll talk about the women's title here in a little bit. Seems pretty clear to me what the women's title match is going to be. And then he and TNT, right? Jay Lethal is going to be getting another TNT title match. Is it going to be on TV? Are they going to hold off until All Out? That we don't know. But we also know, based on what we saw here, that Jungle Boy against Christian Cage seems to be the direction. And I think that would also be a hell of a match. I mean, I'd much rather see that than, him in there with Luchasaurus or somebody. I think Jungle Boy and Christian Cage is the match that we're going to get it all out. It's the match that I've been looking forward to ever since they did the whole angle where Christian turned on him. And I said, Christian is still very good in the ring. We saw that when he wrestled Kenny Omega. Christian may be pushing 50 soon, but Christian is fucking great. You put him in the ring with Jungle Boy, he is the perfect opponent for Jungle Boy to work with. That is exactly the kind of veteran that Jungle Boy should be in the ring with, who is going to do everything in his power to get this kid over as much as possible. So the card is really, the key matches now are pretty much in focus. I mentioned Miro. Miro is in the back. He's in a darkened room. And he says that Malakai put him through changes and dragged him into the dark. Julia Hart shows up. And she tells Miro to give into it and embrace it like she did. And she puts his hands on him, I think on his shoulder. And Miro says to her, there's only one woman who could touch me. And it's not you. Miro said his war path to his God is now clear. And it leads directly to the House of Black. He's going to give in to the House of Black so that he can destroy them. I got to be honest with you. I honestly don't remember how this issue even started. We've been getting these segments for so long now and nothing has really happened. I can't remember exactly when or how this thing started. Was it the four-way? Was it the All-Atlantic title four-way at Forbidden Door? Or was there something that happened before that? I honestly can't remember. It might have been Forbidden Door. But this has been kind of dragging on now for so long and we haven't really, it's kind of the same stuff over and over again. I forgot how this whole fucking issue even got started in the first place. Powerhouse Hobbs was in the back. And he was interviewed and asked about being done with Ricky Starks. Are you really done? That's what she wanted to know. Are you really done with Ricky Starks? Before he could answer, this is of course an AEW specialty. We could all joke about the blood, but the other thing about AEW, it's a fucking meme at this point. You cannot be interviewed in AEW without being interrupted, usually before you even can utter a single word. If you're in the back, you will never be able to get out what it is that you're trying to say before somebody interrupts you. Always, like clockwork. There isn't a single fucking promo where there isn't some sort of interruption. So here come QT Marshall and the Factory butting into Hobbs's promo. And QT says that they're going to finish Ricky Starks tonight because he has a match with Aaron Solo. And Hobbs tells QT, don't let your problem become my problem. So basically, you better take care of Ricky Starks tonight, is what he was saying. Shout out to Steven Santos for becoming a channel member. Thank you, Steven. We had Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh up next. They come and walk to the ring. They talked about Satnam Singh slamming Wardlow through a table. Said that they were not yet done with him. Jay Lethal gave Wardlow an offer, or an ultimatum. Either give me another shot at the TNT title, or we're just going to come take it from you. So out comes Wardlow, and he says, you want another shot at the TNT championship, you can have it. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk to the ring right now, and I'm going to whoop all three of your asses. Everybody cheers for Wardlow. He starts walking down to the ring, and we hear FTR's music. So FTR is coming up to back up Wardlow. Remember, these guys are all buddies. They were all part of the Pinnacle together. The Pinnacle was never really ended. The Pinnacle just sort of faded away. Right, we had MJF and Wardlow with Tully Blanchard and FTR and Shawn Spears. We never really got a proper end to the group. But these guys go back a ways because they were all part of the same faction. So they get into the ring and the heels bailed out to the floor. Sanjay Dutt was looking for something under the ring. I have no idea what he was looking for. It looked like he was expecting to find something and it wasn't there. Like legit, like, oh shit, it's not in the place where it was supposed to be. But while that's going on, Jay Lethal climbs back into the ring. He tries to attack Wardlow and it didn't work out too well for him. FTR cut him off and hit the big rig to close out the segment. Dax Harwood is, for those who don't know, is wrestling with a torn labrum. So he's pretty beat up right now. But these two are in the middle of the biggest run of their career. I think you'd have to cut his arm off to get him to take time off. So he's going to gut it out. And it just makes me think, you know, torn labrum. Kenny Omega wrestled for an entire year with a torn labrum. Adam Cole is out right now in part because he also has a torn labrum. So I don't know what it is with these guys and their shoulders. It seems to be a lot of that going around. Ricky Starks one-on-one with Aaron Solo of The Factory. Two men who used to be tag team partners on the independent scene. So they know each other very well. Solo countered the Rochambeau, but Starks ended up winning with the spear. There really wasn't much else to this. After the match, Nick Camarado, who is doing some new gimmick now. Camarado went from being a caveman to being some kind of playboy, I guess, the way he's all dressed up now. I don't know what the hell he's supposed to be. They're trying something different with him. He's not having much more luck with it, but they're trying something different. Camarado got into the ring with a chair. Ricky ducked the chair shot. He put Camarado down with a Will Hobbs-esque spine buster. So he's throwing that back in Hobbs' face. Solo hit Starks from behind, and Starks broke free, ended up fleeing the ring, and he went up into the crowd, and they cut back to a shot of Will Hobbs in the back, and he threw a TV monitor down. He's frustrated. He's frustrated by what he just saw. Ricky Starks was in the crowd. He was taunting him. Another match, another potential match for All Out. Unless they blow it off on TV, that should be an All Out match. Lexi Nair was in the back to talk to Billy Gunn and his sons. And Billy was trying to tell them how disappointed he was in them, disgracing him, the match that he made famous, losing that dumpster match last week. Those guys almost got killed last week. I wasn't sure if they were legitimately in the dumpster when the Acclaimed, you know, rolled it off the stage, but I saw that they were. I saw, like, there was a screenshot. You could see one of their boots, but they were having some trouble getting that thing over. I mean, that thing ended up doing a complete flip. That could have ended very badly for them. So that's pretty crazy. But so they're lucky that they didn't get seriously hurt on that stunt. So Billy Gunn is browbeating them, and here comes Stokely Hathaway. Stokely is just he's approaching everybody in the back. He's trying to basically sign half the roster at this point. But I popped. There's one thing I popped for in this segment when he moseyed on up to them. He saw Billy Gunn, he called him Grandpa S. For some reason, that made me laugh. I did laugh out loud at that. So Billy threatened him, and he ended up leaving. He tried to give his business card to the sons, and Billy cut him off and basically said, get the hell out of here. So then Billy told his sons that he got them a match on Rampage. So we already had one interruption in this backstage segment, right, to go to the point I just made. But that was not the only interruption. We had two interruptions. Because when Billy tried to tell his sons what he had done, here comes Danhausen. Danhausen walks into the camera frame and he says that It's going to be him and the big bearded fellow. They would see Austin and Colton on Friday night. I had no idea what he was talking about. Not a clue. Until they showed a graphic running down the Rampage card later in the show, and they said, Eric Redbeard is coming back. Because Redbeard came in, he wrestled that one time. I mean, he popped up on the Brody Lee tribute show, but he did that one six-man tag, the trios match, on the buy-in show for one of the pay-per-views. It might have been Revolution. And he looked good. I mean, everybody in that match, that whole match was fantastic from what I remember of it. But they used him the one time, and that was it. And now they're bringing him back. Again, I don't know if it's a one-off. I don't know if he signed. But, like, how the hell am I supposed to know who they're talking about? They didn't bother explaining what he meant by that, who he was referring to. Again, unless I missed it. But it wasn't until they showed the graphic later I said, oh, okay, Eric Rowan is back. Just completely random. Completely random. Jade Cargill was defending her TBS championship on this show. In an open challenge against Madison Rayne, who just signed with the company, she is now a coach for the women's division, but we saw her in action on Friday. She accepted the challenge, and so we knew we were getting this match tonight. Excalibur mentioned on commentary that Chris Statlander is out with an injury, another injury, which really sucks. Because I had her picked to be the one to beat Jade and win the TBS championship. And I remember a few days ago, I did read there was a report from, I think, one of the dark matches, that she had tweaked her knee. And there were a couple of people who were at the taping who said that it was clear she tweaked her knee or something with her knee, but they thought it was the good knee, not the knee that had the torn ACL that she had operated on. But I didn't hear anything after that. And honestly, I put it out of my mind and didn't really think of it until Excalibur mentioned the fact that she's hurt. So hopefully, whatever this is not as serious as that. If it was something torn, then we're not going to see her for a while. But, man, I mean, you talk about being snake bitten. This woman just can't catch a break. But this match with Jade and Madison Rayne, not the smoothest match, but not as bad as I had feared. Madison Rayne is somebody I know. She's, you know, the former Knockouts champion. She's been a Knockouts tag team champion. She's been around for 20 years now, right? Mrs. Josh Matthews. She's been around for 20 years. But I am not aware of how often she's been wrestling. I don't think she's been wrestling at all. And it wasn't like she was out there as the best women's wrestler in the world before. So if she's been laid off for a while, now you're putting someone like that in the ring with Jade Cargill, who's still very green. This could have been a disaster. I didn't know what to expect here in this match. As it turned out, it wasn't so bad. She put Jade down with a DDT for a near fall. Kiera Hogan was out there in Jade's corner. Hogan got up on the apron, distracted Madison, and here comes Jade. And the spot was that Jade was going to give a pump kick to Madison Rayne, but Madison Rayne was going to move out of the way, and Jade would instead hit Kiera Hogan with it. Madison moved out of the way. Here comes Jade Cargill with the pump kick. Kiera Hogan sold it, took a bump off the apron. The problem is the boot missed by a foot. So that didn't look too good. Rayne went for the cross Rayne. Cargill stuffed it, though, and ended up hitting the Jaded for the win. She now improves her record to 36-0. I would think they probably want to get her to 50. Or at least tease that she's going to get 50, and maybe then she loses. She's made it this far. I mean, look, if the woman is 36-0, it'll take a while, though, because they don't have house shows. Jade is not going to be wrestling on AEW live events like with Goldberg, where they can fucking pad the record. So it'll be a while if they want to get to 50. But I just kind of feel like you've made it this far. You may as well try to shoot for the 5-0. And maybe whoever's going to beat her beats her and you know, makes her 49-1. Instead of just doing it when she hits 40 or, you know, 43 or some crooked number like that. You may as well just wait. Especially if Chris Statlander is hurt. I don't know. I mean, maybe they want to get the championship offer and put it on Athena. Athena came out when the match was over. She was out there dressed up as a baddie. Nobody recognized her. She got into the ring. She attacked Jade, whipped Jade into the ropes. Kiera Hogan reached in, pulled Jade out to safety. And Athena picked up the TBS title, and she held it up. You know, again, it really does come down to how much longer do they want to go with the undefeated streak. Athena would be a fine choice. If Chris Statlander is hurt, I think Athena would be my pick to be the one to take the championship from her. I know there's a size difference there, but I think you can build up Athena as the underdog in that match. Her finish is fucking great. I forgot what she's calling it now. It has a new name. I still think of it as the Eclipse. The O-Face, I think, is what she calls it. It's a great-looking finish, and the thing about it is she can hit it from anywhere. It's like an RKO, but off the top rope. It doesn't matter how big the opponent is. She can drop you with it from, you know, any of the top four, you know, ring posts. So I think she would be a fine choice, and if that's the case, then I would imagine that that's going to happen sooner than later. And probably not going to wait for the 50th win. But, yeah, it sucks about Statlander, though. Again, hopefully that's not a serious injury. Backstage, we have Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm. Thunder Rosa is the AEW Women's World Champion. And Tony Schiavone mentioned the fact, again, that Statlander is injured. And because Chris Statlander is out injured, that has now elevated Toni Storm to the number one contender spot for Thunder Rosa's title. Now, the two of them have been friends. They've been tag team partners, right? The whole Thunderstorm thing. So, Toni Storm brought up the fact that, look, I do have aspirations to be the AEW Women's Champion. I'm going to have a match on TV next week, and I'm going to hopefully keep my momentum going, and I want to be the world champion. And Thunder Rosa said, look, we'll talk about a title match some other time. So I think there's your world title match for All Out, Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm. I would pull the trigger on a title change. Yeah, Thunder Rosa won that championship on Dynamite back in March in the cage match with Britt Baker. That was in March. We're heading into September. Toni Storm has had, I think, a good showing so far from what we've seen of her in AEW. If it were me, I would put the title on Toni Storm. At All Out, I would have Toni Storm go over on Thunder Rosa. I would change the world title on that show. Speaking of world titles, that brings us to our main event. With 30 minutes left in the show, Jon Moxley defending his interim AEW World Championship against Chris Jericho, Lionheart Chris Jericho. Jericho is the one who Moxley beat to become champion the first time 2 years ago at Revolution. These are the first two AEW World Champions. And this might have been their first singles match since Revolution 2 years ago. Jericho entered to his old White Zombie song from ECW, which I'm not really a fan of. The song, not ECW. He was wearing his old Lionheart vest. He had the black and yellow tights. I would assume this is the first Lionheart Chris Jericho match since the match at One Night Stand with Lance Storm. Before the break, Jericho ripped Moxley's earring out of his ear. Just yanked it right out of his earlobe. He got chants of "you sick fuck" as we headed into the commercial break. When we came back from the break, now, after he ripped the earring out, you know, Moxley was holding his ear, and then he kind of let go. There was no blood. I didn't notice any blood. They go to break. We come back from break, and Moxley is bleeding all over the place. Not just from the ear, but from the forehead as well. I didn't see how that happened. But you knew if Jon Moxley was going to be in action on this show, it was only a matter of time before he started bleeding all over the place. So we had a ton of blood in the opening match, and we had a ton of blood here in the main event. And it wasn't long before Jericho was bleeding too. So Moxley's bleeding all over the place. Jericho, as the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon, busted out the figure four leg lock around the ring post, which I love that spot. Moxley came back with a cross face, but it was brief. Jericho got him in the Walls of Jericho, and as they were building all of this drama, it looked like Moxley may have passed out, but then he woke back up. And they're building all this drama. Is this going to be it? Is he going to tap out? Is he going to pass out? Excalibur said, we got to go to picture in picture, and that killed the whole fucking vibe. Just, you know, this big dramatic scene, and then it just goes into a tiny box. It killed the whole thing. During the break, though, Moxley briefly fought his way out of it. Jericho locked it right back on. So when we came back from the break, he still had the hold applied. And after a few more seconds of struggling, Moxley eventually did reach the bottom rope, and he got the break. Jericho caught Moxley coming off the top rope with a code breaker for a close near fall. Jericho got frustrated. He goes over, and he pulls off two of the top turnbuckles, two of the four top buckle pads. He pulled them off. And then we had a moment of unintentional comedy. I'm sure this will end up in the next Botchamania. He starts waving to somebody on the outside. We can't see who it is. But then we cut to the crowd. We see that it's Sammy Guevara, who just got married. Sammy Guevara is in the crowd. And Jericho's waving for him to throw Floyd the baseball bat to him. Sammy got a little overexcited, and he overshot his target. So he threw the bat, and it went soaring over Jericho's head and rolled out to the floor. So Jericho had to go out of the ring, and he had to pick up the bat and bring it back inside so he could finish the spot, which was hitting Moxley in the head with the baseball bat. He went to go pin him, but Moxley kicked out. He tried for the pin, and Moxley kicked out. So Jericho then, after that, hit the Judas effect, tried again for the pin, and again, John Moxley kicks out. Jericho goes outside, and he grabs the interim title belt, brings it back into the ring with him. He goes to hit Moxley with it. Moxley sidesteps him, and Jericho goes into one of the exposed buckles that he exposed. Clearly, he went into this buckle full force. Now, this did not look like a blade job to me. It was so quick, and there was so much blood. This fucker... Now, keep in mind that Jericho legitimately broke his nose in the barbed wire everywhere match that he had with Eddie Kingston in another moment of unintentional comedy. He hit Kingston with the code breaker as Kingston was coming at him with a barbed wire-wrapped steel chair. When he hit the code breaker, the chair fell and hit Jericho in the face, and that's how he broke his nose. So it's possible that his nose was already very sensitive, and he probably went nose first into the buckle because it looked like that's where a lot of the blood was coming from. He was bleeding a lot on the bridge of his nose. He's bleeding even more than Moxley. He was bleeding the way that Brody King was bleeding in the opening match. He's leaking. There's blood everywhere. I'm like, what? I said on Twitter, I go, is this fucking Dynamite or Bloodsport? What am I watching here? It's ridiculous. So now Jericho's bleeding all over the place. You know, if it was just in this one match, you'd be like, all right, cool, right? This big dramatic world title match with all this blood. But it doesn't feel as dramatic when we just had this in the opening match. A trail of blood all over ringside. So now both guys are bleeding. Moxley locks on the bulldog choke. Jericho got out of it. This time he locked on the old school lion tamer. This is what I wanted to see. I said, if he's going to be Lionheart, you got to use the lion tamer. So he buried the knee in Moxley's neck and he wrenched back. Moxley got out of it, though. And he locked on the sleeper hold. He locked on the choke. Jericho held on as long as he could. And then finally, Jericho had no choice but to tap out. And John Moxley retains his interim world title in a very bloody affair, which has become a recurring theme on these shows. I thought this was one of Jericho's best matches in months. I thought he looked good in this match. More than he has in a while. And I like the Lionheart throwback for one night. We have some members of the Jericho Appreciation Society running down to the ring. Here comes Hager. Sammy is back. They attack Moxley in the ring. They're ganging up on him. Here come members of the Blackpool Combat Club. Here comes Claudio. Here comes Wheeler Yuta. Here comes Ortiz. Ortiz is like an honorary member at this point because his tag team partner is gone. His tag team partner is going to be on the shelf for a year. He's got an ACL tear. We're not going to see Santana for a while, if ever again, in this company. So Ortiz is a man with no direction. He's got no partner. He's got no storyline. So he's kind of like the hanger-on right now of the Blackpool Combat Club. So he feels like Sami Zayn is an honorary member in his mind of the bloodline. Ortiz is like an honorary member of this group now. They run out to try to even the odds, but here come more members of the JAS 2.0 is out there. The number, Daniel Garcia, the numbers are just overwhelming now. All the baby faces are overwhelmed. And now we hear Cult of Personality. Everybody cheers. Here comes CM Punk. Wearing a black t-shirt, jeans, no title, but here he comes. Here comes the champ. He is officially the AEW World Champion. He's moving around fine. He's beating up members of the Jericho group on his way to the ring. He gets in the ring. He clotheslines Jericho out of the ring. And it comes down to Punk and Moxley, champion and champion. Moxley is on his knees, kneeled down, back turned to Punk. He knows Punk is there. He's taking his time before he turns around. He does the dramatic turnaround. We get the face-to-face between the two champs in the middle of the ring. Moxley's got blood coming out of his ear from, you know, the earring that Jericho ripped out. And Moxley flips him off and then bumps shoulders with him as he walks out of the ring. Punk didn't touch him. He didn't do anything. He let him pass. Punk stayed back in the ring, and he was showing off that his foot is feeling pretty good. And everybody cheered for him. And now it is all but official. By next week, we will have the official announcement that it will be Chris Jericho. It'll be CM Punk returning to the ring at All Out in Chicago on September 4th to challenge Jon Moxley. It'll be champion against champion, title for title. The announcers on commentary were saying, you know, as far as we're aware, Punk is still not medically cleared, but he'll be medically cleared. Punk will be medically cleared, and that is going to be your main event. And it's a big one, too. This is a match that they have not done before. It is a match between two of their biggest names. CM Punk, they're getting him back in Chicago. He already missed one Chicago pay-per-view. He could not miss two. So they're going to get him back for that show. And it's babyface against babyface, which is a unique dynamic here for this match. I'm sure, look, they're going to be in Chicago, right? So there's going to be plenty of CM Punk fans. I don't think it's going to be as clear-cut for Punk as some people may think. I think it'll be closer to an even split between them, maybe 60-40 in favor of Punk. I don't think people are going to just, you know, hate Moxley when he walks into the building. But Punk will have, you know, he'll be the fan favorite going into that match. And this will be where CM Punk makes it official. You know, he is the one and only champion. That will then pave the way for the return of MJF. So everybody wondering, where's MJF? Why is Tony Khan not talking about MJF or teasing MJF or building him up or bringing him back? Where is he? What is he doing? Maybe there really is heat. They've been holding off for CM Punk to come back. I said a few weeks ago they're holding off for the fall television season. They've got TV rights that are coming up next year for renewal. They're going to want their ratings to swing back up in the fall because they can't seem to get out of this 900,000 range, which is a good number. But compare it to where they were a year ago, they had shows that were doing a million one. That's where they want to be. That's why I said them getting back Punk, probably Omega, Danielson, individually. None of these guys have demonstrated that they are on their own going to be able to, you know, bring in an extra 100,000, 200,000 viewers. But those are three big names to get back pretty much all at the same time. So if they can do that, maybe those numbers will start to swell back up. That's what Tony Khan is going to want to see heading into the fall. That, I think, is why they're saving MJF more than anything else. So Punk coming back now is good news if you are also waiting for an MJF return. Because there is nobody, there is not anybody else on this roster that MJF should be challenging for or defeating to win his first championship than CM Punk. You have to bring it back around to that story. They've had two matches. MJF got a cheap win the first time. Punk beat him the last time. You do the rubber match. Punk puts over MJF. MJF says, fuck you, I beat you. Now I proved I'm the better man and I took your title. And now you've got a brand new world champion that you can build around. That is the only story they should be gunning for. That is the story. It all comes back around to MJF wanting to beat CM Punk and be the one to take that title away from him. So that's where this story, I think, is headed. Punk and Moxley is a big match for them to do in the meantime. Promos building up to it are going to be a lot of fun to follow. We know that on Rampage this Friday, Bryan Danielson returns. He is going to do an interview of some kind as he previews his match with Daniel Garcia next week. Also on Rampage, we're going to hear from the new FTW champion, Hook. We're going to hear from Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee. Gun Club take on Danhausen and Eric Redbeard in the random match of the week. Parker Boudreaux is going to make his Rampage debut against Sonny Kiss. I see they're bringing back Sonny Kiss to be demolished here on Rampage. Orange Cassidy goes one-on-one with Ari Daivari. Sammy Guevara, Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti, the newlyweds, are going to be wrestling as partners on Rampage Friday. they're going to be defending their AAA mixed tag team titles, which I had completely forgotten that they even won. I think they won them back at Triple Mania. I totally forgot about it. It's never been mentioned since. Now they're busting them out. They're going to defend them against Dante Martin and Sky Blue. More titles being defended on these shows. As if we don't have enough titles between, and I'm just talking AEW titles. We're not even talking about the other promotions whose titles we are constantly seeing on these shows. You know, Will Ospreay and Aussie Open are going to be on the show in a few weeks. I'm sure he'll be out there with his Rev Pro title. We've got IWGP titles. We've got countless Ring of Honor titles on the show. AEW has plenty of its own titles. We already have the AAA Tag Team Champions. Now we're going to have the AAA Mixed Tag Team Champions. That's a lot of belts. Watching Netflix without ExpressVPN is like me buying tickets to a Hall & Oates concert in Madison Square Garden, but only hearing the opening act with Train. I'm sure you remember that story. I ended up getting a Train concert with a quick cameo by Hall & Oates at the end. I wasn't very happy about that, and I wouldn't be very happy without ExpressVPN either. For those who don't know, Netflix has different content libraries for every country. So what we have access to here may not be the same that you have access to if you live someplace, for example, in Europe. Right? The Dark Knight is one of my favorite movies of all time, but it was taken off Netflix in the US a few months ago. I can still watch it on Netflix in other countries, like Japan, using ExpressVPN. Without it, I would only have access to a fraction of what Netflix offers, just based on where I live. How is this possible? By spoofing my location, I control where Netflix and other streaming sites think I'm located. It's simple. I just open up the app, select the country I want. In this case, it was Japan. I tapped one button to connect, and when I refreshed the page, it was there. What I love most about ExpressVPN is that it has servers in 94 different countries, giving me access to thousands of new shows and movies. It also has blazing fast speeds, so I can stream in HD with zero buffering, and it's compatible with all of my devices. I can watch stuff on my TV, my laptop, or my phone. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Dynamite next Wednesday has the beginning of the Trios Tournament. Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee take on the Young Bucks, and who knows? Tony Storm one-on-one with Kylan King. Brian Danielson takes on Daniel Garcia. Best 2 out of 3 falls. That should be a fun match. Let's take a look at the poll. 78.4% thumbs up for Dynamite tonight. 13.2% thumbs down, or thumbs in the middle, I should say. 8.3% thumbs down. I definitely don't think it was a thumbs down show. There was enough good shit in the ring where I can't give this a thumbs down. This is a thumbs up show. Just the middle of the show, though, bouncing from one segment, and some of the segments, too. I mean, you know, the Gun Club and Danhausen to hype up some stupid random match on Rampage. Then they went to another segment. Hobbs didn't even get a word out. QT Marshall is interrupting him, and we go back and forth to, you know, these different backstage segments. You shave a couple of those off, I'm just saying, it makes the show flow a little bit better. At Solomonster, that was the place where you can go to vote in the poll. We've got Joseph Brooks. Joseph with the 999. Do you think one of the things that made Booker T a huge star in WCW is because he stayed as far away from the NWO as possible? He said behind the scenes they wanted him to join, but he said, I'm a solo. Yeah, I think it helped him out a lot. Everybody joined the NWO. He would have just been another face in the crowd. NWO at one point had upwards of 30 people. They had so many people, they had to splinter off into two different factions. You had Red and White, and you had Wolfpack. What would Booker T have gained by being part of the NWO? Bret Hart joining the NWO was the stupidest thing that they could have done with Bret Hart. I mean, I can understand why Hogan would want Bret in the NWO. You know, keep him close, rub shoulders with him so he doesn't have to face him. But no, I think Booker T made the right choice. He also says, did you hear about the rumor of Bobby Lashley wanting a Hurt Business reunion? I know Cedric was a Triple H guy. Well, it's up to Triple H. I don't know that you could do the Hurt Business without MVP. And good luck trying to explain that one. Spicy Dry Chicken, no speed reading from Excalibur tonight. It is better to stay that way. Hey, Joshua, thank you for the sub, brother. Look at that guy. Look at the muscles on that guy. I think Lex Luger had muscles. Look at that. Look at that guy. I'm going to have a full review, by the way, of the Lex Luger A&E biography. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into a lot of shit on the Lex Luger stuff on the podcast this Sunday. Spicy Dry Chicken, MJF right now is watching in the shadows, waiting. Not going to be much longer. The return is coming. You just got to wait a little bit longer. Hey, TLA, it's going well. Thank you for asking. The Tall 193, what Vince McMahon idea was so mind-numbingly stupid that you actually ended up liking it? Example, Rey Mysterio's eyeball getting plucked out. The Gobbledygooker. I like the Gobbledygooker's theme music. So, when he was out there dancing with Mean Gene, I was kind of getting into it, you know? Very stupid, but yet, I'm a Gobbledygooker fan. Anti-M-Bishop 07, 1 year ago tomorrow, COVID took my best friend, and this week has been mentally tough for me. Dynamite was the perfect getaway for 2 hours. I'm very sorry to hear that. That sucks. I've heard a lot of stories like that, but I'm glad you enjoyed the show. Thank you for the support. Flamethrower, what's going on, Mr. Fluff Salisbury? Good to hear about the big return. Of course, I'm speaking about Eric Redbeard. Of course you are. Yeah, the Luger bio was very good. You were on the fence about watching it. Honestly, that is as close as we are going to get to the Icons episode that got pulled from Peacock that never aired. This was different. This wasn't the Icons episode, but I mean, I'm sure most of the content that was in this is what we would have gotten in the Icons episode. So I would definitely encourage you to watch it. Anonymous. We've got Anonymous dropping a $5 super chat. College exam in 5 hours. Probably should have gotten to sleep at a decent time, but stood up until 3 a.m. Irish time watching Dynamite instead. Wish me luck. Wow. Yeah, you probably made the wrong decision. You could have just recorded Dynamite and watched it the next day. Now you're going to be a zombie. Good luck to our zombie friend, Anonymous. Quintus Brown, in my opinion, one of the best Dynamites in AEW history. Wow. I don't think I'd go that far. Taco Tuesday. On a Wednesday? Is Anna Jay's promotion acting intentionally horrible, or is it part of her gimmick? Help me understand. It's basically her gimmick at this point. She acts completely ridiculous. It's all played up for laughs. That is the gimmick. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. The Nacho Man. Ooh, yeah. The Nacho Man. Yeah. With the $1.99, best wrestling pickup line. I'll leave that up to the chat. Give me some of your best wrestling pickup lines. Shinakuma, cheers to the Sala Monster. Cheers to Shinakuma. Thank you for the $2. Emiliana with the $4.99. Hangman finally get his apology from Matt Jackson, and he chose to side with the Dark Order. He did the right thing. I am so happy about this. Well, look, I mean, the Bucks were complete dicks to him, so I would have done the same thing. I probably would have kicked him in the crotch, and I would have gotten the Dark Order to just gang up on them and stomp the hell out of them if that were me. Samoan Fan 101, all Lucha Underground casket matches were great. Taco Tuesday wanted to scream "Just Kiss" during the Bucks segment. Yeah, not the best acting in the world. They're not going to win any awards for that. So we have our first pickup line. I want a 619 without the 1. Yeah, for wrestling fans, that sounds about right. We got to work some wrestling vernacular into it, though. There's got to be some pickup lines that have words like work and shoot. Kayfabe. You want to break kayfabe with me? Something really, like, lame and corny. Aussie of Steel. How's it going, Solomonster? Just wanted to ask what you think is the most underrated championship belt design. Underrated. Underrated championship. You know what? I was a fan of the European title. I don't feel like the European title gets as much love as it probably should. That would be up there on my list. Bliss fan says, "Let me in." Is my pick. How did I know it would have something to do with Alexa Bliss or Bray Wyatt? Drew Johnson again. Thank you for the 50 earlier. Solomonster is the GOAT. Thank you, Drew. Drew is the king of the super chats. I got to get a little crown graphic. So whenever he donates, I can see his name is on the screen. I can put the crown right on his name. Taco Tuesday with the $2 super chat. Moxley comes with an always bleed guarantee. The ABG, that's right. Spicy Dried Chicken, I would love to see AEW and New Japan co-host another Forbidden Door show at T-Mobile Park in Seattle. Give me the Wrestle Kingdom stage set, but in America. We've got Mr. Ramsey with the Super Chat. WDYT currently should be Cloud to Kenny's Sephiroth. Is it Sephiroth? Isn't that like a Final Fantasy thing? Sabian Esco, Anna Jay choking you out or Rhea Ripley assaulting you? Hey. I'm not a picky person. I know what Dominic would prefer. Christopher Perez with the $9.99. Can we go one title match without Moxley bleeding? It's overkill at this point. I feel like it's Moxley's crutch. Samoan fan, is Sky Blue really blue pants from NXT years ago? No. That is not blue pants. Blue Pants actually does work for AEW. That is a totally different human being. Dick the Cock Johnson. What is going on, Dick? Trustbusters are better than the Bloodline, he says. Epsilon Sama says, you know how to pronounce Sephiroth. That's Kabbalah. I don't know how to pronounce it. That's why I'm asking you. It is Final Fantasy. Okay, see, I knew that at least. It's Final Fantasy VII. King Bling Blah, $4.99. If a TV company made Tony Khan an offer that he could not refuse, but had to run Monday 2 hours primetime on a great network, would he take it or not? He would not. He would not take it, and not even because of Monday Night Raw, which would be suicide anyway, but he has made it very clear he does not want to compete with the NFL. With his tie with the Jaguars, he does not want to compete with the NFL. I mean, nobody wants to compete with the NFL. WWE does not want to compete with the NFL. Right now, Raw feels like it's riding high. 2.2 million viewers last week, 1.9 million this week. It's all going to come to an end next month. It doesn't matter what they do. I don't care who's in charge. Nobody wants to compete with the NFL. But because his family has ties to an NFL franchise, he has said he would not run on a Monday night regardless. So the answer is no. Rizzo with the $20. Thank you, Rizzo. Do you think WWE pulled the Icons episode of Lex because of the A&E deal? Because I cannot think of any other reason why they would have pulled it. My pickup line is, are you on top? Because I'll job to you all night. I don't think that one's going to work. You make a good point, though. I mean, could the A&E thing have had something to do with it? Or was it or was it a case where the A&E thing didn't really even develop until after the fact? The Luger Icons thing was already in the can. It was done a year ago. I don't know how recent the A&E thing was. It probably was more recent than that. So you could be right. It would have been nice to get some kind of explanation from WWE since they had already advertised it and they put a date to it. And then they just pulled it and they didn't say anything about it. They didn't say anything about it. I'm still waiting on the Vladimir documentary. They still haven't released that either. They're going to put that on A&E? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's being held hostage. Triple H. Maybe Triple H can help. Triple H. Release the documentary. You want to be a man of the people? You want to be a man of the fans? Release the documentary. We have got... Who do we got? We got Spicy. We've got spicy dried chicken without flavor. Ari Daivari or Stokely should recruit Private Party. Keep them away from Matt Hardy and Andrade. Revive Mark Quinn and Isaiah. Don't lose them. Well, Private Party already, I mean, they have nothing to do with Matt Hardy or Andrade anymore. I think they've basically dropped the whole Andrade family office stuff. So, Private Party, they've been on Dark. They're still around. I think they're just, you know, waiting to figure out what they want to do with them next. Stokely Hathaway, he could try to revive their career. I think that would be great. I think that would be great. Makes more sense than the fucking ass boys signing up with Stokely. Stokely should be doing something with Private Party. Samoan fan, 101, buy or sell, Mantar and Beaver Cleavage. I gotta go Mantar. We gotta go Mantar. I have a whole Mantar super chat. How could I not do Mantar? Right? I did the whole Mantar bellow. HBKC83, in your opinion, who is the one wrestler who is equally effective as a face and a heel? I mean, you could throw out people like Ric Flair, Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan. Hogan had two huge careers. One as a babyface, one as a heel in the NWO. I can't narrow it down to just one, because there have been so many that have been effective in both roles. The Rock. I love The Rock as a heel. Nation of Domination Rock, kicking out Farouk as the leader of the group. Hollywood Rock. Rock as a babyface is also great. Right? I mean, there's been so many of them. Maybe I go with The Rock. Rock was fantastic in both roles. We've got Johnny A with the $10 super chat. Great show as always. Got to see the AEW title up close when Punk was at C2E2. Beats out by Miles the WWE World and Universal belts. You are the hardest working man in wrestling podcasts. Thank you, Johnny. Thank you very much. The AEW World title is a good looking belt. I think it looks a hell of a lot better than the giant logo belts that WWE is using. Paul Heyman, the wise man, has arrived. $5 super chat. I bet Solomonster never thought of the idea of Wade Barrett making his in-ring return, or at the very least having a one-off match in Cardiff. Well, I haven't thought of it because it's completely unnecessary. I mean, I haven't heard one person clamoring for a Wade Barrett return at Clash at the Castle. Why do we need Wade Barrett on that show? He's fine doing commentary in NXT. There's a reason why why Solomonster hasn't thought of it, because Solomonster doesn't think it's necessary. Rizzo with the $10 super chat. I forgot who it was, but a wrestling reporter said that Vladimir's documentary had to be released soon because either Vlad is in poor health. No. Okay, so what you're thinking, Mike Johnson of PW Insider, very good friends with Vladimir. And he put a whole post together months ago, basically pleading with WWE to release the damn documentary because Vlad was not doing well health-wise. I think he might be doing okay now, but this was before last year. This is before the new year. That's how far back this goes. It was supposed to be released in September of last year. And he was saying, you know, I really hope that, you know, they release it before the year is over. He's been having some real health issues, and, you know, it would be nice for the documentary to actually be released publicly. They didn't give a shit. They still haven't released it. I hope he's doing better. I know he's still around. He's still, you know, going to shows. He's still active. But that's what you're thinking of. That was Mike Johnson who mentioned that. Quintus Brown with the $5. As of now, which match are you looking forward to the most? Reigns against Drew or Punk against Moxley? Punk against Moxley. I'm looking more forward to Punk against Moxley. Epsilon Sama, which AEW star do you think jumps to WWE in 5 years? I have no idea. 5 years from now, who the hell knows? How the hell am I supposed to know? 5 years from now? We know two people whose contracts are up in 5 years, Malakai Black and Adam Cole. I'll tell you what, it's going to be one of them. It's going to be one of the two of them. Darth Panic, why hasn't USA moved WWE to Tuesdays or Wednesdays to avoid the NFL? Moxley is a deathmatch guy. He is going to bleed whenever he can. Well, that doesn't make it any less stupid. Much love to you too, Brock, in the chat. Why hasn't USA moved Raw? Because Monday Night Raw has been Monday Night Raw for 30 years. That's why. The show is literally called Monday Night Raw. It has been established on that night for so long, it's become a wrestling tradition that you have Raw. You have wrestling on Monday nights. If they haven't moved it by now, then they're not going to move. Monday is their night. That's why they don't do it. Tuesday Night Raw just doesn't have the same ring to it. And they already have NXT on Tuesdays. You'd have to reshuffle the entire schedule. If WWE could have their way, they would have a show on the air every single night of the week. They almost do. They have a show on Monday. They have a show on Tuesday. They have a show on Friday. They have shows that air on Peacock, I think, on Thursday, right? Isn't that when Main Event drops? Or Superstars or whatever it is? NXT UK, I think, right? That's a Thursday show. Wednesday's the only day they're missing. We're nearing 350 on the light. Let's get those likes up. We're very close to 350. Let's try to hit four. Let's try to get 400 here before we clock out for the night. Got a few more super chats coming in. They did Thursday Raw Thursday. Yes, they did. One time, 25 years ago. Thank you for reminding me. We have Samoan Fan 101. While I did enjoy the Kurt Angle documentary, I do think his story is incomplete without an in-depth look at his TNA run. What do you think? Yeah, I mean, you knew they were going to gloss over it. They mentioned it. They glossed over it. They had Jim Ross say that it was a disaster, which it was not. Personally, he was going through a lot of disasters, but his TNA run was not the disaster that he made it out to be. And I think that it was incomplete, but, I mean, what were they really going to show? It wasn't so much about the feuds, right? It was about his life. It was about his overall career. They never really focused too heavily on any of the individual feuds. That's what the Rivals episode was for, where they focused on Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. So you talk about his TNA run, and what are you going to do? I mean, they covered the fact that while he was in TNA, he had all these DUIs and all these different issues. I mean, you wanted to spend 15 minutes talking about Kurt Angle against Samoa Joe? I mean, what exactly would you have expected them to cover when you say that they should have gone in depth on his TNA run? That's not what the documentary was for. You know, that's not the audience that it's geared towards on A&E. The diehard wrestling fans would love to hear about Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe's feud and Kurt Angle against Sting and the Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett stuff. That whole controversy. I'm not surprised they didn't delve into it all that much. EJ Slamp with the $4.99. I put a poll in the Facebook group asking which New Japan guy should Starks face first. And with 67%, Ospreay won. I hope Starks is in the best of the Super Juniors next year. You can put Will Ospreay in there against anybody. It's going to be a great match. We need to see more of him. Hey, I saw that Kota Ibushi was teasing that he wants to come to AEW and rekindle the whole Golden Lovers thing with Kenny Omega. Kota Ibushi at AEW is something that I could definitely get behind. Let's make it happen. We're going to lose Takeshita. He's going back to DDT. We can lose Takeshita, and in his place, how about we trade him and we get Kota Ibushi? Now, Ibushi is physically... He may never come back. I don't know. His whole shoulder situation is completely fucked. He should have had surgery. He didn't have surgery. He wanted to heal it naturally. 9 months later, he's no better than he was 9 months ago. You saw what he said on social media? He can't even do one push-up. Does that sound like somebody who's coming back to the ring soon? But he's talking the other day about how he would love to go to AEW. Is he going to go with one arm? Get your fucking shoulder fixed. Then you can come to AEW. I just remember, you know, when Triple H brought him in to be in the Cruiserweight Classic, every match that he had, I mean, he was the star of that whole tournament. And they wanted to make him the winner, but he didn't want to sign a contract. He's the smartest guy. And people say, oh, he's so crazy. Ibushi, he's so nutty, he's not all there. He was smart enough to not accept a contract from WWE because he knows how that would have ended up. You imagine if Kota Ibushi signed a contract with them back in 2016? He'd be the one, instead of Tozawa, it would be him chasing the fucking 24/7 title on TV every week. It was the best decision he ever made. But he was the star of that whole tournament. I still remember that burning hammer spot in the match that he had with Kendrick. And Daniel Bryan on commentary just completely lost his shit when that happened. So did I. Rizzo dropping another $20. Thank you, Rizzo. He says, this is just for my happy day with that bum Avila being fired today. Now my Tigers can turn things around. Also, I love the trumpet song that Diaz has for your Mets. Oh, it's great. It's the best entrance for any closer in baseball. When you hear the trumpets, everybody in the stadium now has the trumpets that they bring with them. Mr. Mets playing the trumpet. It's great. You know, back in the day, it was Mariano Rivera, Enter Sandman. Now it's Edwin Diaz coming out to the trumpets. Best entrance for a closer in all of baseball. I'm trying to think of what the name of the song is so I could tell everybody, and I can't think of the name. Well, somebody in the chat will remind me. Well, what's the name of that song? I had booked a very interesting match on the last stream. I believe it was Bret Hart against JD from New York. So let's see what we do this time. Let's begin with the men. And we begin with Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. This man could do it all. This man was great at horseshoes. He was great at bowling. He was great at basketball. He could throw a football from one end of the field to the other and catch his own pass. This man could do no wrong. What could he not do? Let's see who Mr. Perfect is going to be stepping into the ring with. Mr. Perfect one-on-one with the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Yes. I love it. You know, I'm trying to think. I can't remember a singles match between them. I don't think that I have ever seen a singles match between Mr. Perfect and Randy Savage. At least not in WWE. But that's a winner right there. That right there is a God-tier pick here in Be the Booker. Let's go to the ladies. We begin with... Ah, poor Toni Storm. Poor Toni Storm with all the cake all over her face. It's in her hair. You can't get that... You know, I hear you can't get that shit out of your hair. It's very hard. But let's see, Toni Storm, who she's going to be getting into the ring with. Caked Tony. I love how, by the way, this Be the Booker thing is the horniest fucking thing. It always stops for that split second on Nikita Lyons in that shot. You notice that? You notice how horny this Be the Booker thing is? How it always just seems to freeze for an extra second on Nikita Lyons and her ass in that shot? Toni Storm against Tammy Sitch. Well, I suppose if you want a little bit of liqueur to go with your cake or your pie or whatever it was that Charlotte threw in her face, pie, right? It was pie. You want some alcohol and pie, then that's the match for you. That is not a match I care to see. As flip over to the tag teams and see what we can do here. Let's see. Did I see the Nikita Bond? Yeah, I'll talk about NXT this weekend. We begin with Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. Davey Boy Smith, former WWF Tag Team Champions, members of the Hart Foundation. Off to a good start here. Owen and the Bulldog going to be getting into the ring with the Dark Order. Now, let me just be fair here. Let me just be fair. Because I'm not a fan of the Dark Order. The Dark Order is an instant turnoff for me. However, in this image, we are specifically talking about Stu Grayson and Evil Uno. And they are very good. So I think in their prime, if you put Owen and Bulldog in the ring with Stu Grayson and Evil Uno, you would actually get a pretty good match out of it. But that is not a marquee match. So that is why I gave it the buzzer. It'd be a good match. I'm not trying to book good matches. I'm trying to book great matches. I'm trying to book matches that people want to see. I'm trying to book matches here that are going to sell tickets. They're going to put asses every 18 inches. That match is not one of them. So the name of the song I was talking about before, thank you, Oofman, it's Narco. The song is called Narco, by Blaster Jax and Timmy Trumpet. So if you want to look up the song and get addicted to it, you can pop that into your Spotify. There you go. It's called Narco. We have got EJ Slemp. There is an indie here in Chicago that started as a fundraiser for a local high school. Now the principal runs it, and Will Ospreay is the champion. That's very cool. I did not know that. I thought you were going to say Will Ospreay is the principal. I guess he's got multiple jobs. Maybe New Japan is not paying what it used to. Eric, no, it's not synthwave stuff. Just listen to it. You'll see. It's not synthwave. Oofman, thank you again for your $2 super chat. Samoan fan, what's up with these crappy umpires these days? You know, you could have just rephrased your super chat by saying, what's up with Angel Hernandez? Why does he suck so much at his job? I think the better question is, how has he been able to keep his job for so long? EJ Slemp, Diaz does have a cool entrance, but my favorite is Liam Hendricks from my White Sox. He comes out to a We Will Rock You remix with strobe lights. Not as cool as Diaz, I'm sorry. Samoan fan, Perfect and Savage had one match in 97, only 5 minutes long. You know, that's a crime. That is a crime. They probably had, like, house show matches and stuff. I'm talking like a TV match or a program. I couldn't think of it. I'm like, you know, they were together in the same company for so long, and they had a little bit of overlap. They were partners that one time at the Survivor Series. But yeah, I couldn't think of an actual... You know why? Because most of the time... Yeah, a good chunk of the time, they were both heels. But, you know, Savage had that run as champion in 88. That was right before Perfect came into the company. By the time Perfect came in and really started to get going, Savage was already back to being a heel. And, yeah, you know what? I guess it never worked out time-wise. It just never worked out. That's crazy. Dr. Dakota Scorpio. You can always count on the Hart family to come through for Be the Booker. Any matches with the Harts, good or bad, automatic 3-star classic. At least three. At least three. And Steven Santos, thank you for the $5. With Triple H slowly putting his stamp on WWE, who would you say will be his guys or pillars to lead them into the future? I think we're already starting to see it. I think we're, you know, Cross is one of his guys for sure. He's going to be the number two heel on SmackDown now behind Roman Reigns. So Cross is one of his guys. Ciampa is one of his guys. Gargano is going to come back, not a doubt in my mind. He's one of his guys. Those are three of the big ones right there. Loomis, very high he is on Dexter Loomis. Him and Shawn Michaels were always very high on him. And I'm sure were very upset when he got released. So you're starting to see it. If you just watch the shows, you can already tell who his sort of handpicked guys are. Darth Panic, you should create Be the Booker matches in Sound Off Gamer. It's an idea. Maybe when I wrap up the My Rise stuff. Got episode 9 coming up soon. I'm open to it. We have to narrow it down, though. We have to narrow it down to some of the bigger ones. I haven't been keeping track of all these, so maybe somebody else has. If not, maybe you can put a list together. Somebody has some free time and email it to me. Yeah, we've been doing Be the Booker for almost the full 2 years now. But I would only go back, a certain number of months. Put them all on the list. Email them to me. Yeah, a lot of rumors about Wyatt. I've said if Bray Wyatt does come back, he's going to come back to WWE. The Wyatt family got going in NXT under Triple H. So I'm sure he has a fondness for Bray Wyatt. I don't know if he'd be coming back as The Fiend. He might reinvent himself all over again. He might come back as a totally different character. Do I expect him to be back in WWE? Yes, I do. Too bad the Mets are going to choke in the playoff. The Mets, man, they're cruising. They are cruising. 10-2 today over the Reds, I believe it was. And I guess the Dodgers, I think, have the best record, but I think the Mets are only 5 games behind them or something like that. So we're flying high right now. Thomas Rondon, $2 super chat. Hey, girl, let me show you a mount. It's another potential pickup line. I'd probably, you could walk up to one of them in the bar or something and say, hey, you want to break kayfabe with me? And then she'll throw a drink in your face and laugh and walk away. Hey, Amiibo Guru, one of our channel members, our Sound Off Superstars, where does Danielson rank among your all-time favorite wrestlers? He's on the list, he's up there. His story arc heading into WrestleMania 30, I think, is one of the best stories they ever told that they never intended to tell, but they kind of got forced into it. And being there live in the building for the payoff of WrestleMania that year was great. I still have some of the confetti that fell from the ceiling. They had the purple and gold confetti that fell, So that was a great story. That was a great night. Danielson is just, he's going to go down as one of the best in-ring workers of all time. He's on my list, but he's not at the top or anything like that. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, I don't trust my Blue Jays down the stretch as we inch closer to the postseason. I'm kind of worried, but go Mets, LOL. Hey, there's always room on the bandwagon. We got plenty of room for you. We got plenty of space. You can hop on the bandwagon. Everybody in the chat can hop on the bandwagon. You're all welcome. All right, I'm going to be live with you again on Friday night. We had fun on Monday. We covered all the AEW stuff tonight. Friday night, it is SmackDown and Rampage. And then, of course, Sunday is episode 769. All the big news of the week. Who knows what news might break on Friday? We've had a bunch of Friday news dumps over the last couple of months. More hush money payments came out from Vince McMahon, so we'll talk about that. There may be more before the week is over. They're up to about $20 million now. Maybe we can get to 25. Do I hear 25? Do I hear 26? 26? Do I hear 30? 30? Do I hear 35? This is just going to go up, 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 up. There's no end to it. There's no end to it. And people online have said, my God, this guy, all the money that he has, you got to think that he could find a high-end escort service. Why would he spend all this money? And these people don't understand something. It's not just about the sex. It's not just about that. It's about the power. You can't just get that from renting an escort for a night. In a lot of these situations, it's the power as much as anything else. And he was a very powerful man for many years. He was the most powerful man in his industry. So we'll see what other news might come out. Talk about that on Sunday. And as I said, the Lex Luger A&E biography, which was very good. And I do encourage you all to go watch it if you didn't see it. So I'm going to get out of here. Have yourselves a good night. Be well. Stay safe. I'll see you guys on Friday night. Take care.